God's grace and strength be with you tonight and always. Amen. As I mentioned earlier, we are wrapping up now the study that we've been doing for Lent on the 23rd Psalm. And I ask for your grace to do things slightly out of order. We've gone through the order of all the phrases all along the way, but we did verse 5 out of order. We did the second part of verse 5. We're looping back now to the first part. But perhaps you would, along with me, read together these scriptures as we have had them all these weeks, so we can remember that. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me on paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. It's such a curious phrase, isn't it? David's been talking about sheep and lambs and going beside quiet waters. He's been talking about God's comfort in the midst of, you know, a very uncomfortable situation, a dark valley, the darkest, toughest time of life. And then this image that maybe doesn't make that much sense to us. God preparing a table for us in the presence of our enemies. Here's how I want to try to get at it for us so we can maybe begin to grasp and understand it. I want to ask you, what of all the different kinds of food there are, which one's your favorite? You know, there's junk food, comfort food, fast food. There's sort of hoity-toity gourmet food. I think maybe for me personally, I think my favorite might be free food. A close second, if you've ever been to one of those Brazilian steakhouses, all-you-can-eat food. Oh. You know, that if you have, maybe if you don't know what I mean, when you go there, you have a coaster, and it's green on one side and red on the other. When you have the green side of your coaster showing, they bring you chicken, they bring you five different kinds of beef, they bring you pork, they bring you anything you can imagine. And when you want to just digest it for a little while, you flip that coaster over to red, and you just enjoy the peace and the feast that you've been having, all you can eat. Mm. Well, as you think about what your favorite food might be, I'm wondering and I'm guessing that on the top of that list would not be in front of my enemy food, right? That just doesn't make any sense, and yet that's where the psalm is. I think this might help. We here in Houston have a great baseball team, the Houston Astros. We won the World Series in 2017. And do you know who we played on opening day of 2018? Do you know who got to see the Houston Astros get that ginormous championship ring put on their finger? The hapless Texas Rangers. It seems fitting, doesn't it, that it would be a Texas team, one that we had maybe been felt like the little cousins, the underdogs for years and years when they were in the American League and the Astros were in the National League. But the other team in Texas, the one that didn't even get a whiff, our rival, got to watch the Astros put on those huge rings. It's kind of like that. Among a rival, among and before an enemy, God's going to pour out a blessing. Now, if you and I were facing an enemy, if we were over at the war in Ukraine, we're probably wearing flak jackets, helmets, we're guarded and protected. You don't imagine too many soldiers standing out in the open, opening up their meals ready to eat, their MREs or whatever it is that they're having. You don't imagine them being out in the open and doing that. But it was a different time than David's time. A different time in the sense that you could see your enemy a long way off. You could see their spear if they were getting ready to throw it. You could hear their arrows even before they landed. You had time to do that, and you could taunt your enemy. If an attacker was coming towards Israel, Israel could show their strength and their peace by just enjoying a feast and celebrating and shouting while their enemies were over on the hillside watching, hating, and wondering, how are we ever going to conquer such a happy people? Happy and trusting people at peace and ease, having a feast even while we're threatening them. That gives us some clues of what David is talking about here in this feast in front of his enemies. Now, I want you to think of this phrase for a moment. You may have heard this before. God hates the sin, but he still loves the sinner. Right? You've heard that. God hates the sin. He hates the sin that we do. He hates the things we neglect to do, the words we leave unsaid, the good we could do that we leave undone. He hates those actions and the orientation to hide from God, to lie to God and to each other, to try to make ourselves look bigger and better than we really are, to justify ourselves, all those things God hates. He hates that in us. But even though he hates our sin, God still loves us. He hates the sin, but he loves the sinner. He hates the things that we do, but he loves who we are because we're his creation. We're the ones that he planned for, to be in fellowship with him forever. That's why, as you heard in the Old Testament reading, this description of heaven being like a feast. Sounds like a particularly good Texas feast to me, too, doesn't it? The finest of meats and the choicest of wines. There's got to be brisket on that table. God in his goodness knows that we have our struggle with sin, but he still loves us. God, in other words, knows who his real enemy is. While we may at times act like enemies opposing God by our sinfulness, he knows that sinfulness was put in us, placed in us, started in us by God's real enemy, his real opposition, the devil who tried to be equal to God, who tried to conquer over and say, I want to be on the throne. The devil is his real enemy. The devil's the inventor of sin and rebellion. And when he wanted to put a knife in God's heart and wound him, Satan came after us. You would think, probably Satan was thinking, okay, God hates me. He cast me out of heaven. So when I make his beloved creatures sin, he's going to hate them too. He's going to reject them and turn away from them. Well, Satan may have had big plans, but he sure must not have had a very good memory, because God's had this plan of salvation in mind before the foundation of the world. God has had in mind that he would set up a table in the presence of his enemy, and he'd welcome you and me to sit at that table. His real enemy was Satan, but God knew that he had other plans. Now let's think about our own meals for a minute, and then let that be a connecting point to it, to this meal of God, this Lord's Supper, and this feast at the end of all times. When you have someone over to eat, when you invite someone, yes, there's the preparation, the cleaning, whatever it is that all we do, but it says a lot when you invite someone over for dinner, doesn't it? Whether it's Sunday after service or it's a Thursday night, you know, quick get-together. It says a lot. It's someone that we trust. It's someone we want to know better. It's someone we want to spend time with. It's someone that we accept, maybe even love, our relatives and so forth, our dear friends. And that kind of idea of meals, it isn't just here in our American culture. That's a part of the Christian culture all the way back to the Middle East. When you ate with someone, it was a big deal. You were signaling to that person, or persons, I accept you. I welcome you. I'll protect you. I will provide for you. I'll walk with you and see us as important to each other. That acceptance and even love. One of the most remarkable stories in the Old Testament, I sometimes wish we could have a service where we have like seven readings instead of just three. Or, well, we snuck in the 23rd Psalm, so I just didn't think we could go past four. But one of the most amazing stories of acceptance at a table, of what I'm talking about here, was in the Old Testament with King David. The one who said, you prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies, extended an invitation to his table, to the grandson of his enemy. The king before David was Saul. And when Saul, when David was anointed as king, that king went after David, chased him, hunted him down, strove to murder him. You would think that David would say, I want nothing to do with my enemy. I want nothing to do with the one that's seeking my life. I want nothing to do with any of his relatives, because if King Saul was after me, surely others of his family are going to be after me too. But David trusted in God. David, who had received God's grace, wanted to extend that grace. And so he asked, is there any one of Saul's relatives who's still alive? He's told that Mephibosheth is. Mephibosheth, who was crippled, and when everyone ran away in fear, thinking David would slaughter all of Saul's family, Mephibosheth is just sort of huddling around in the gutter with no place to go as a crippled man who's lost all of his lands, lost everything, because his grandfather Saul has lost his place as king. David says, go and find him. Find Mephibosheth and invite him to be at my table. Can you imagine? Imagine King David's table. How rich and luxurious it must have been. In came Absalom with his flowing locks, his beautiful hair. In came Solomon, probably with his nose in a scroll, right? You know, he's the guy full of all so much wisdom. And they're sitting at the table waiting to start. They're hesitating. Nobody's eating anything yet. Kind of like here at Gethsemane, sometimes as the service ends, if the candles aren't all quite put out by our dear friend Shannon, we wait. They waited. You can hear down the hall the crippled leg dragging itself across the floor as Mephibosheth comes in the room, as he sits down. Chuck Swindoll years ago told this story, and he said he could imagine that once Mephibosheth was seated at the table, that the white tablecloth across David's magnificent royal banquet would have hidden the crippled legs, would have made David and Absalom and Solomon and Mephibosheth as equals, shown acceptance there together at David's table. This enemy of David was shown acceptance and restoration, and welcomed at his table. Jesus does very much the same thing, doesn't he? He'll do that by welcoming us, even though we had formerly been enemies of God. I think eating together also signals something very personal. The personal involvement. I could send you good wishes, right? Here's a nice note for you. Glad you're out of the hospital. Glad you're doing well. But if somebody stops by your house and brings a meal, or if someone says, come on over to my house, that takes it up again from just a phone call or just a text or just a nice note. It takes it to a whole other level, this personal involvement that I will engage in the activity of getting ready for this meal. I know that everybody in this room has probably prepared some big meal, Thanksgiving, Christmas dinner, hosting your whole family or friends, whatever it was. And the rhythm of that, at least in my house, and probably like your house, goes a lot like this. You clean 2 days before. You buy all the groceries 1 day before. You cook like crazy the day of. Hours and hours and hours. It's all eaten in 25 minutes, and then they go, what's for dessert? It's like that, isn't it? It's an involvement. It's a participation. And none of us begrudges that time. We're doing it because we have that affection for those people. Imagine how involved Jesus was in this Lord's Supper. First, he washes their feet. Second, he had told the disciples where to get all of the elements, where to bring everything together in this room. He even knew what room it was in. He was aware and involved in all the activities. And then lastly, he takes this beautiful Passover supper, this story of God's involvement with his people demonstrated in food. He takes this story to a whole nother level. In the epistle reading, the Apostle Paul called it this idea of we will be blessed in his family if we indeed share in his sufferings. To read it again, we are children, heirs of Christ, co-heirs, if indeed we share in his sufferings, that we may also share in his glory. Friends, the Lord's Supper is Jesus' invitation to share in his sufferings. Take, eat. This is my body, which will be beaten and broken and pierced and bled empty for you. Take and drink. This cup is your participation in my suffering on the cross. Baptism is where we receive what he did for us in death, but this supper is where we participate, where he makes it as real to us as he did to those disciples 20 centuries ago. Jesus says, take and drink. This cup is the New Testament in my blood, which is shed for the forgiveness of sins for many, personally involved, personally loving and accepting. Remember this, friends. Jesus knows who's going to betray him. While it seems all mysterious in the way he addresses Judas, I suggest to you that has more to do with Jesus trying to keep the door open to Judas's heart more than it has anything to do with Jesus didn't know who was going to do it. He surely did. He knew Judas was going to betray him, but Jesus still washed his feet. Jesus still offered him Holy Communion. And Jesus knew who would deny him later. Peter, we all hear about the three times before the rooster crowed, but didn't all the other disciples run away? And haven't all of we at some point or sometime let our witness grow silent, not stood up for the good, and instead let evil win? Jesus knew who would betray him, who would deny him, and yet he still prepares this love feast. He still died for those disciples who denied him and betrayed him, and he still dies for you and me. And he prepares a final feast. I love the description in the Old Testament reading. At the end of it, it says, he is our God, and we were right to trust in him. But the beginning describes this amazing feast on the mountain of God. A feast that Jesus has not eaten yet since he did at that Lord's Supper. He said, right, I'm not going to eat this again till I eat it with all of you. He's been preparing that banquet. How big a table it must be to welcome all of us. How much wine, the finest of wines and the choicest of meats, he must need and be getting ready. Jesus, loving us and blessing us and welcoming us. What he will do at that last table, what he will do is not wipe away sins. That's already been done on the cross. He'll wipe away your tears. He'll welcome you home. He'll say, hello, my brother. Hello, my sister. Hello, dear child of God that's been loved from the beginning. I gave you this feast of Passover long ago to show the enemy, no, I'm not rejecting them like the Father rejected you. I'm sacrificing for them. And he prepares this last feast as the devil will be destroyed, death itself destroyed and wiped out and taken away. This ultimate feast where he no longer wipes out sin, but he wipes away our tears and welcomes us home. There's one more feast, I guess, is worth talking about. And this is the one sometime after Easter when Peter hasn't seen Jesus yet. And as they go fishing, they kind of give up. They don't know what to do next. Suddenly they realize it's Jesus on the shore. Suddenly they have this amazing catch of fish. But when they arrive on there, Jesus already has fish for breakfast waiting for them. And at that meal, Jesus offers a very personal acceptance to Peter. Peter, do you love me? And after Peter says yes three times, Jesus then offers him a very personal involvement. You're still on my team. You still have work to do in this kingdom of God's. I still want and need you. I truly hope and believe that in these next days, or however long we get to draw breath, you'll sense God's nudging you, his personal love and his restoration, his personal acceptance of you, that you are co-heir with my son, Jesus Christ. I didn't just love you because I had to. I adopted you in my family. I didn't just welcome you to a table at the Lord's Supper, but I made you my own. I paid the price for it through Jesus. At that resurrection meal, Peter gets restored, gets involved, and I think God will still whisper that to us as well. He nudges me from time to time. I pray he'll do the same for you. And may he strengthen us this Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, this Easter, and all eternity long. Amen.